Welcome back to the last installment of Time Being, the first, and the present installment of Being Time, the last chance to talk about this with a bunch of words before enacting it with mind. And for those who'd like to join the upcoming session, we have a chance to just be time for 7 days maximum, or a day or so minimum. These are just somewhat arbitrary divisions of the time being. So we are down to this last section of the time being, and I feel a little like a mosquito biting an iron bull. This is tough, this last bit. Dogen's not just coasting to the end. He's really challenging us at the end here. So we're at the very bottom of page 3 on this sheet. We're at Shuxian. Zen master Guixing is the heir of Shoshan and a Dharma descendant of Linji. He abides in that particular Dharma position of many names and relationships. One day he taught the assembly. For the time being, mind arrives, but words do not. For the time being, words arrive, but mind does not. For the time being, both mind and words arrive. For the time being, neither mind nor words arrive. Another set of possibilities in the time being. Words and mind. One or the other arriving, both arriving, neither arriving. In any given time being, these are some possibilities. This does remind me of a poem of Dogen's that says, "Mind itself is Buddha. Practice is difficult. Explanation is not difficult. Not mind, not Buddha. Explanation is difficult. Practice is not difficult." That's a little Chinese-style poem of Dogen's that I've long found intriguing, and I think we've discussed it here before when we were studying Mind Itself is Buddha. So this poem comes from this occasion where Matsu, I think it was, always taught that mind itself is Buddha, or this very mind is Buddha, and his student Dame had some insight into that, and was woken up from his non-Buddha life and went off to live in the mountains and just practiced mind itself as Buddha. And I think it was something like Matsu went to have somebody go check on him one time. How's that Dame doing out there in the mountains? And he said, "What are you practicing out here?" And Dame said, "Mind itself is Buddha." And this student of Matsu said, "Well, these days Matsu's teaching is different." And he said, "Oh yeah, what is it now?" And he said, "Now he teaches not mind, not Buddha." And Dame said, "Well." I don't care. I just practice mind itself as Buddha. And this reporter went back to Matsu and reported that back, and Matsu said, the plum is ripe. Dhamme me means great plum. So the great plum is ripe. So Dogen picks up on this story, and it's this, you know, this is it's a koan poem, I think. It's you could take it, yeah, it's in Moon and a Dewdrop, in the back there, in the poems section, where it's playing with the idea, of, in this case, of practice versus explanation, and whether they're difficult or easy, difficult or not difficult. So it could be interpreted in various ways. But mind itself is Buddha, Dogen says, practice of that is difficult, but explanation is not difficult. And at least we could hear that we could maybe have some understanding of what it means by explanation is not difficult. Just this very mind is Buddha. That's not difficult to explain. Well, what do you mean? There's nothing, no explanation necessary. It says this very mind is Buddha, but practicing that is difficult. And then not mind, not Buddha. Explanation is difficult. So you could say this is like emptiness teachings. As you, for those who tried studying Nagarjuna, explanation is difficult. How do you explain how there's no mind and no Buddha? But the curious part here is practice of that is not difficult. That's kind of interesting, huh? Like in the realm of emptiness, actual practice is not difficult. Because even difficult doesn't really exist either. No way to avoid it. So we could take this in different ways, but I think it could be related to, for the time being, mind arrives, but words do not. So Dogen's poem is about practice and explanation. Here it's about mind and words. So practice and mind, maybe a little different, but seems some similarity of the different permutations of mind and words. For the time being, mind arrives, but words do not. So, and Dogen will comment on this as this goes on here. But one way to take this would be just that mind is like understanding. That understanding how things are arrives, but words to explain it do not. Or we understand, but we can't express it. And as you know, Dogen is big on expression and how we say things to convey the way. So in one moment of time being, it may be that mind, the mind of understanding arrives. I understand that this is it. But if someone were to say, well, express that or say something to express that fully and completely, we might be at a loss. Like it's sometimes said, it's like, how do you explain the taste of chocolate to someone who's never tasted it before? The mind might completely be experiencing the taste of chocolate very clearly, but how do you explain it? Well, it's a little bit bitter, but like totally sweet at the same time, and it's like really rich, but and it melts in your mouth. But that doesn't really like explain chocolate. Mind arrives, but words do not. For the time being, words arrive, but mind does not. So we might be able to explain something, but not really have an understanding of it. even to just spontaneously express something, but it doesn't quite accord with full understanding. So, for the time being, mind arise, but words do not, is a little bit like explanation is difficult, but practice is not difficult. And for the time being, words arrive, but mind is not, is a little like practice is difficult, but explanation is not difficult. For the time being, both mind and words arrive. For the time being, neither mind nor words arrive. So that was a saying that someone said. And then Dogen says, both mind and words are the time being, of course. Both arriving and not arriving are the time being. When the moment of arriving has not appeared, the moment of not arriving is here. So both arriving and not arriving are the time being. Is a sometimes is made reference to this story of about how arriving and not arriving are both the time being. Two monks visited Jiaozhou. He asked one of them, have you arrived here before? Or have you come here before? But it's the same as this, you know, arriving and not arriving. So have you arrived here before? Which often there's these kind of like double meanings, like have you been to this temple before? But you could also hear his underlying deeper meaning of have you arrived here before? Have you reached, arrived, come here before? The monk said, I've never arrived here before. And Jiaozhou said, have a cup of tea. Then he asked the second monk the same question, have you arrived here before? And he said, I have arrived here before. And so Jiaozhou said, have a cup of tea. And one of the resident monks listening said to Jiaozhou, why did you give the same response to both those monks? And Jiaozhou said,
have a cup of tea.
Have a cup of tea. Yes. Yeah. So this is a little bit like, you know, having already arrived here before is the time being, and not having arrived here is the time being. They equally receive a cup of tea, and we might say, commenting on, you know, why are arriving and not arriving both the time being? We might say, why is also the time being? And that'd be like translating Jiaozhou's story into this. Arriving is the time being, not arriving is the time being. Well, why are both arriving and not arriving the time being? Why are both is also the time being. Nothing escapes the time being. When the moment of arriving has not appeared, the moment of not arriving is here. This is now, it gets like this kind of tricky thing he's getting into. Mind is a donkey that is not yet left, and words are a horse that has already arrived. At least in parentheses, that's put in here because it's referring to a story, of course, about the donkey and the horse. It's kind of a. It basically comes from Chong Qing asking Lin Yun, what's the essential meaning of Buddha Dharma? The usual question. What is the essential meaning of Buddha Dharma? And Lin Yun said, when the donkey matter has not yet left, the horse matter arrives. I heard it translated without the matter in there. Like, before the donkey has left, the horse arrives. And seems to be implying that the donkey is like the feeble wobbly, what is it, donkey-like kind of a half-breed horse?
Yeah, but they're not wobbly, they're strong.
Oh, they're strong. They're strong, but they're not as graceful, maybe, huh?
Well, they're not considered to be as valuable.
They're smaller.
They don't move until they're ready. I know, but I just read an article about how
they go down into the Grand Canyon, right, instead of horses. Because maybe because they're smaller, they can go in these narrow trails.
But they're known to be stubborn.
Stubborn and hard to manage.
Right.
There we go. Donkeys are stubborn and hard to manage. But before they leave, the graceful, elegant, full, non-stubborn, non-hard-to-manage horse has already arrived. So, and I don't know in China how they saw donkeys and horses in relation to each other, but maybe horses have a little bit more reputation of being more, complete or something. Bigger and, maybe just, well, horses are work animals too. But if we say the stubborn one, before the stubborn one leaves, the non-stubborn one has already arrived. Before the donkey leaves, the horse has arrived. And maybe that refers to some old other story in China that we'll never know about. But it's one of those many strange Zen metaphors about the radical non-duality of our practice, is how I hear that. It's, you know, this donkey-like person doesn't have to be removed for the Buddha horse to arrive. Before the donkey leaves, the horse arrives. Instead of like, first get rid of the stubborn donkey, and then Buddha will be here. That seems to be the principle. Funny way of saying it, but Dogen, you know, just kind of references it sort of on the side. Before the donkey has left, the horse arrives. And that's the essential meaning of Buddha Dharma in this case. And then later, Chang Xing, the one who heard that, he didn't clarify this matter for 20 years, but then later, when rolling up a bamboo screen, he had this realization. And he said, "How extraordinary. Having rolled up a screen, I see the world. If someone asks me what essence I understand, I will hit him in the mouth with my fly whisk." And he also said, "The single body revealed among myriad forms, when affirmed, only then is there intimacy. In the past, I mistakenly searched for the way. Now I see it's like ice and fire." In the past, he mistakenly searched for the horse outside the donkey. So, as Dogen often does, right, he just kind of like doesn't even quote that whole story. He just weaves the essence of the story into his commentary here by saying, "Mind is a donkey and words are a horse." And looks like in this version anyway that Kaz Tanahashi or someone has put in to help us out a little bit, this in parentheses, "Mind is a donkey that has not yet left. Words are a horse that has already arrived." And then Dogen goes on, "Having already arrived is words, and not having left is mind." So this is getting kind of hard to like wrap your mind around and keep all these pieces together. Arriving is not coming, not arriving is not yet. So it's like mind, before mind has left, words arrive. If we're saying that these words as the expression, a true utterance, a true expression, comes forth not later than the mind of understanding. It's kind of, they go together. Right? Before the mind of understanding leaves, and then we later on try to afterwards explain that, right at the time of understanding, before that mind leaves, the words have already arrived. Having already arrived is words, and not having left yet is mind. They arise simultaneously. Expression. We could take this as Dogen's commentary on how true expression comes forth, is just in the moment of time being, when the mind is resonating with and confirming this time being, that words can come forth at that time, instead of kind of later, when later we'll try to conceptually put it all together and spit it out. And then arriving is not coming. It's kind of like arriving is not arriving, and not arriving is not yet arriving. So it's just, lest we fall into thinking, well, we kind of got what he's saying here, but we know what arriving and not arriving means, but actually arriving is not really arriving, and not arriving is not really not arriving. Yes?
The same thing as call and response.
Come up together.
Am I interpreting it?
Inquiry and response come up together. Communing with the source. Yeah, you could say if that means like in a conversation, that in a dialogue, that there's an inquiry and immediately a response right along with the mind of the present moment comes forth. Good, that would be one way to look at inquiry and response come up together, call and response. Another angle on this inquiry and response would be like a person, a practitioner practicing the jewel mirror samadhi would ask, what is the meaning of this samadhi, right in the middle of that samadhi? And the response would be like from Buddha, the response of confirming the whatness of the samadhi. So that term that we sometimes talk about, kano doko, mystical communion of Buddhas and sentient beings, something like that would be another way to look at inquiry and response come up together, like a sentient being's inquiry or deep questioning brings forth the Buddha's response. But in a human-to-human Zen dialogue also, I think that's a good connection there too. That a question, and this you so will get a chance to practice this next week. That an inquiry can come up and just a response can come forward from the present mind. The time being is like this. Before we go on to this next section too, this thing about arriving and not yet arriving. Just to bring up another reference. Also, a little thing you could play with in your mind too is that horse is one of the zodiac animals for time, right? So noon, the noon hour is the horse hour, and donkey is actually not one of the zodiac animals, one of the time animals. So, like, you know, before some non-existent time leaves, you know, this specific noon hour arrives. This is completely, you know, whether Dogen's thinking about particularly, like, oh, like, let's bring the horse hour into the story. I mean, Dogen's mind is unfathomable. I wouldn't put that above him, though. This is Dogen's Shobogenzo Juki confirmation, where he's quoting Vimalakirti says, "Past birth has already perished. Future birth has not yet come. Present birth does not abide." So, a past moment of birth, like moment-to-moment birth, past arising moment is already gone. The future one has not yet come, and the present moment arising does not abide. So this is Vimalakirti's, we could say, commentary on the time being, from the Vimalakirti Sutra. But now Dogen says, Vimalakirti says, past birth has already perished, future birth has not yet come, present birth does not abide. Dogen says, but past has not necessarily already perished, future has not necessarily not yet come, and present does not necessarily not abide. Even when you regard having already perished, not yet come, and not abiding as past, future, and present, you should clarify that not yet come is itself the past, present, and future. Accordingly, confirmation is attained in both birth and death. Enlightenment is attained in both birth and death. So even when we think of, it's hard enough just to get a little hold of Dogen's working with this, you know, not yet arriving and already arriving. But then Dogen's saying, don't actually think that not yet arriving means not yet arriving. So that's a little bit like the last sentence there. Arriving is not actually coming, and not arriving is not yet. I think it's very similar to that confirmation passage. He'll take a great teaching that's already really helpful. The past is already gone. The future hasn't arrived, and the present doesn't abide. And I say, don't necessarily think that each one of those is like you think it is. Just so this really leaves us no place to rest our head. The Buddha also, in the Pali Canon, there's that sutra on the better way to live alone. Maybe you know that Thich Nhat Hanh has translated this. And it's basically Buddha's teaching on living in the present moment. And the Buddha says in this short, early sutra, the past is already gone, and the future is not yet come, so just rest at ease in this moment. This is your life. It's basically the gist of the sutra, about just being here now. And then Vimalakirti goes a step further to say, instead of just be here now, he says, the present moment does not abide. And then Dogen goes a step further than Vimalakirti and says, don't think that not abiding means not abiding. The time being is like this. So now this, I think we got to look into these different translations, because arriving is overwhelmed by arriving, but not by not arriving. So we got this word overwhelm. And a strange thing. It seems to be that overwhelmed by, in this Zen usage, means like, it's a kind of positive thing. It's like, when a thing, basically each thing is overwhelming itself or blocking itself is another translation, or as an obstacle for itself, which is a really weird phrase. I don't know where this came from, but it means like things like block themselves. And I hear this as like, again, things abiding in their Dharma position. They're basically blocked in there by all the conditions of the universe. And you could also say that, you know, something abiding in its Dharma position is, it overwhelms itself. It's a weird way of talking, I know. It blocks itself, and but it doesn't block other things. You know, a thing abiding in its Dharma position is kind of blocked in there. It's like locked in place for just one time being by all the conditions that create, that give it its Dharma position, but it doesn't hinder anything else. So let's see what the other ones say here. I think that later, fulfilling, it looks like it's the same character in Chinese as overwhelm and fulfill. Later in the paragraph, like mind fulfills mind, it looks like it's this overwhelm and fulfill look like they're the same character in my translation. See if anyone keeps them the same here. So, arriving is overwhelmed by arriving, but not by not arriving. Existence time, presence is restricted by presence itself. It is not restricted by absence. So they're, instead of using arriving and not arriving, they're using presence and absence. And overwhelm is restricted. Presence is just being present. It is not being absent. They avoid that character. arriving is hindered by arrival, but is not hindered by not having arrived. Arriving is blocked by arriving. Reaching is impeded by reaching and not impeded by not reaching. So we have like blocked, impeded, hindered, restricted, and overwhelmed. A little note that maybe says something more clear about this in here. impeding. So yeah, it's this character gay. So this impeding, blocking, hindering is analogous to self-affirmation, the manifesting of true subjectivity. Hence, impeding, which as itself, being time, is the entire world and all time, signifies the affirming and maintaining of individuality or selfness, without which there would be a one-sided fall into undifferentiated oneness. Yeah, that was a tough footnote from Norman Waddell. Impeding is analogous to self-affirmation, I think, of a person or a thing, anything, is affirmed as itself. The manifesting of true subjectivity, hence impeding, which as itself, being time, is the entire world and all time. Impeding itself is the entire world and all time, It signifies the affirming and maintaining of individuality or selfness, without which there would be a one-sided fall into undifferentiated oneness of all things. So, as we know, there's no abiding self of people or things in Buddha Dharma, but that's why the image for me is like something abiding in its particular Dharma position is like the self of that thing in that moment, for one moment. And it's not just undifferentiated oneness, right? It's like this book is abiding in its Dharma position. It's gone now, but now it's a new one. For one moment of time being, but it's not just kind of like blurred into a like mushy oneness with all things. It's, I mean, from a certain point of view, we could say maybe so, but when we're talking about the Dharma position, it's interdependent with everything else, but it's uniquely, particularly arising here and now. And for some reason, there's this Zen way of calling that like it's impeding itself. It's blocking itself. We could say maybe it's like it's blocking itself from melting into mushy oneness. It's blocked into its particular Dharma position, but it doesn't impede or block any of the things around it. Like my hand holding the book. The book's Dharma position doesn't impede my hand holding it. The hand's in its Dharma position and the book's in it. You get a kind of a sense of that? I admit it's very strange to me to call this impeding, blocking, hindering. We had in the Fukan Zazengi, Dogen's Zazen instructions, we had one translation that I think we tried on for a while at San Francisco Zen Center, and people didn't like this part, so we changed it back to what we chant in Santa Cruz. But I forget which the part was, but it was this line describing Zazen, describing the, like somebody sitting in Zazen, totally blocked in resolute stability. People like, totally blocked. We don't want to be chanting like we're Zazen makes you totally blocked. But it might actually be the same word. Thinking now. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, that is really kind of one of our ultimate koans. Is, you know, how can that be that we are both that everything is time? You know,
mm-hmm.
How can it be that we're interdependent and we're
yeah.
And so, in a way, it seems like this is trying to have a way to explain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's Dogen doing his kind of like making sure that the middle way is maintained, that we don't fall into either things are separate and individual and independent, and that there's just this blurry like oneness. A lot of what Dogen does seems to be carefully going back and forth, so we stay on this without falling into either of those extremes. Totally blocked and resolute stability. Rich.
Well, if one could think of an ultimate characteristic of something as being its relationship or interdependence on everything else, and that everything else is holding it in its normal position, then its ultimate characteristic restricts it or impedes it into being there, because it is its relationship with everything else. That is its ultimate nature.
And its relationship is restricting it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So you're saying its relationship is what's restricting it? The relationship of everything?
Its relationship to everything within what it is related to.
Mm-hmm.
Like if we were all holding hands,
mm-hmm.
I'm restricted by the fact that
mm-hmm.
we're all holding hands.
Yeah. Nice, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like a spot in like a spatial reference might be
spatial.
Like a spot in Indra's net.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's one little location.
But it's connected to everything.
Locked into being right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tied into its place in the net.
Yeah. But of course, I'm going to fly with it as it evolves into the next.
Yeah, yeah. So impeded and blocked in this case doesn't mean like we often think we're stuck in some unmovable, changeable place. It's just like for just
momentary
blocked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We can't go sideways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that maybe it was just one of the notes said. Well, maybe Dogen goes on to say, things don't block each other. So if we take that metaphor just like that, then we maybe have a problem. Yeah, because we kind of like, it's like each thing blocks itself. And maybe it's a wordplay, you know, it kind of hinders itself, but it doesn't hinder others from hindering themselves. Each thing's blocking itself, but it doesn't block other things from blocking themselves. It's a funny thing. There's probably more to the story than we can fathom here. Not arriving is overwhelmed by not arriving, but not by arriving. Mind overwhelms mind and sees mind. Is that what it says in yours, Kathy?
Mind overwhelms mind and sees mind.
Yeah.
Words overwhelm words and see words.
Hmm. Interesting, because
mine says fulfills.
Yeah. So this is a later translation of Kaz. Same thing, almost the same, but they changed.
He uses fulfilled throughout in the most recent.
Yeah, instead of here it stays on overwhelmed, and then this one changes to fulfills.
That's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
I mean, in English we would say those are really different meanings.
Totally. And it may be that fulfills and fulfill. It really, looking up that character, it definitely did not mean fulfill. But maybe there's a connotation that Kaz was trying to pull out the meaning here about overwhelm is kind of interesting. It has a different feeling than block because it's kind of like, it's almost like encompassing something, right? To overwhelm, like a wave overwhelming a person. And then fulfilling isn't that big a stretch from overwhelm, but it's quite a big stretch from block. But even then, actually, fulfill.
I guess I feel like fulfill to me is more like fully whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's fulfilled in its suchness or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like completed. Completeness. Mm-hmm.
Well, fulfill is in the same ballpark as self-affirmation.
Yep.
And we liked the impeding is analogous to analogous to self-affirmation.
Mm. Yeah. it seems to be pointing to not adding anything extra when we're talking from at the point of view of one thing abiding in its Dharma position. The thing fulfills itself by itself, which is a little bit like there's a commentary by Banjin Dotan on Dogen's commentary on the Bodhisattva precepts. And I think he's talking about purifying. I think it's the commentary on not misusing sexuality precept. And he's saying, Purity means that, like in the four great elements, earth, we purify earth with earth. and we purify water with water and fire with fire and air with air. And that's what Buddha Dharma purifying means. It's like the thing itself purifies itself by itself. So that's a little bit like fulfilling, or mind fulfills mind, first of all. Mind fulfills mind. For the mind to be fulfilled just as it is, it doesn't need anything extra from outside of itself. It's a little bit like mind is just totally blocked in resolute stability as it is. Mind fulfills mind and sees mind. This little twist added in there. Words fulfill words and see words. So now we're still commenting on this arriving and mind and words from the original story here. And, you know, the original story is about, for the time being, there's this issues with mind and with words. So in the realm of time being, mind fulfills mind. That's like the whole story. And sees mind. Words fulfill words, or words overwhelm words. Words are just completely words in the time being. Mind is just completely mind. Mind is purified by mind, and words are purified by words. And then fulfilling fulfills fulfilling and sees fulfilling. I think the original says overwhelming overwhelms overwhelming and sees overwhelming. Let's see. It's basically, you know, it's really, mind is fulfills, blocks mind, and then we're dealing with this very question that we're struggling with. What does this mean, this fulfilling, overwhelming, blocking? Well, actually, fulfilling fulfills fulfilling, or blocking blocks blocking, overwhelming overwhelms overwhelming, and sees overwhelming, and this is getting unfathomable if it wasn't already. Another translation is, restriction hinders restriction and meets restriction. It says there's no... I think we just leave it at this.
The next line is, fulfilling is nothing but fulfilling. So all those things are nothing but themselves.
Fulfilling is nothing but fulfilling. This is time. Restriction restricts restriction. This is time. Here's another variation on this section. The word words describes words themselves and depicts words as an object. The word description describes description itself and depicts description as an object in time present. That's getting way non-literal, but but it's, you know, the word description describes description itself and depicts description as an object in time present.
Or that paragraph seems easier.
Expression blocks expression and sees expression. Words impede word and sees word. Impeding impedes itself and sees itself. Impeding impedes impeding. That's time. Okay. As fulfilling is caused by you, there is no fulfilling that is separate from you. Thus, you go out and meet someone. So, this is we could take this as a little Yogacara riff, little mind-only thing. That actually, this whole thing, we're thinking of this abstract philosophical idea about things blocking themselves and fulfilling themselves. But actually, fulfilling is caused by you. There's no fulfilling that's separate from you. So this whole dynamic thing that we're talking about, everything abiding in its Dharma position, this very mind is like creating this incredibly dynamic, inconceivable, universe of time being. It's not separate from us. It's not some abstract thing that we're talking about. It's actually caused by you and not separate from you. Thus, and now this is kind of like the practical, like down to earth, like manifestation, is you go out and meet someone. Someone meets someone. You meet yourself. Going out meets going out. If these do not actualize time, they cannot be thus. They cannot be emo thus. That's a really great section, I think. I meet with a human being. A human being meets with a human being. I meet with myself. And manifestation meets with manifestation. When I meet a person meets another person. This is kind of saying, when I meet a person, a quotes person meets another quotes person. When I myself meet myself, a manifestation meets a manifestation. If there were no being time, none of this could happen. That's kind of a nice emphasis on, like, I'm meeting a person, and this is like not really I anymore. It's like a person's meeting another person. It is ourselves encountering others. It is others encountering each other. It is ourselves encountering ourselves. It's one who is emerging encountering one who has emerged. It is oneself meeting others, other people meeting others. It is oneself meeting oneself. The entire world, exhaustively, with no thing or time left out, is impeding. I encounter a person encounters a person. I encounter myself. Going forth encounters going forth. If they do not obtain the time, it cannot be thus. Mind is the moment of actualizing the fundamental point. So here we get the whole Genjo koan. Whole thing. So when we think of the Genjo koan, one of Dogen's most famous essay, mind is the moment of Genjo koan. Words are the moment of going beyond, unlocking the barrier. So we're still commenting on this difference between mind and words. So if we say that there's the understanding, the mind is like the understanding of the time being, the speechless understanding, and then there's the words that are expressing that. Mind that understands the time being is actually actualizing the fundamental point. It is Genjo Koan. Doesn't need any words, Genjo Koan. But words are the moment of going beyond, we could even say going beyond Genjo Koan, unlocking the barrier for ourselves and others. Words unlock the barrier. Arriving is the moment of casting off the body. Not arriving is the moment of being one with just this while being free from just this.
This is the best part.
That's a really nice part, yeah. Yeah, this paragraph is really great practice instructions. So arriving is actually casting off the body. Datsu tai in this case. But like Dogen's dropping off body and mind, same datsu. Arriving is the moment of dropping off the body. Not arriving is the moment of being one with just this. While being free from just this. That's also being one with just this. We don't want to get stuck in, again, some kind of abstract oneness. So we're one with just this. And simultaneously free from just this. Yeah, I agree that actually this paragraph would be a great thing to post on the refrigerator door.
How do we think of arriving as the moment of casting?
Yeah, interesting, because it's almost like we would think of like departing as like casting off the body or something, right? But arriving, yeah, it's very dynamic.
Penetrating, isn't it? Like, it's penetrating. You're like fully present.
Arriving, and the time being is all about arriving, and then immediately ceasing again. It's, you know, coming to be, manifesting, penetrating the present moment, actualizing, right, is actually dropping off at the same time. We could almost say it's this, you know, arising and ceasing thing. Like the arising is arriving, and the simultaneous ceasing is the dropping off. Arriving is the moment of dropping. We could also say arriving is the moment of casting off the previous moment's body. To arrive at this moment, we cast off last moment's body. And not arriving, it's not, I don't think not arriving means, well, I don't know whether it, when we're talking about words and mind, not arriving, does that mean that there's no understanding and there's no expression of it? Or does it mean on a deeper level, there's always some underlying understanding, but not arriving means from the perspective of emptiness, where nothing ever arrives. And in the realm of where there's no actually ever arriving anywhere, not arriving is the moment of being one with just this, while being free from just this. So could take that as a commentary on emptiness, a little teaching on emptiness. Emptiness is, could be said to be not arriving. Dependent co-arising is arriving, but in emptiness there's not arriving, or not arriving, or not leaving anything. But not arriving is the moment of being one with just this. In emptiness, there's being one with just this while being free from just this. I think you can say that.
Especially. You said something I read about, you know, we talk about impermanence, but then if you look at it and, you know, that things are arising and ceasing, mm-hmm. but if there's non duality, there's neither arising nor ceasing.
Yeah. Yeah. And not. Non-duality, or in emptiness, there's no arising and ceasing. Yeah. Which is a little bit like, so that's what Nagarjuna is always coming back to, is showing how there isn't anything. He's the logical master of emptiness. And so we talked about, he had this thing of to prove that there's no time, no arising and ceasing, is that a moment has, you know, you can't have a moment that actually exists that would arise, because the moment would have these, you know, a beginning, middle, and end, and then the beginning, middle, and end would have a beginning, middle, and end. So you, in the end, you can't find a unit of time. And if you can't find a unit of time, a time cannot arise or arrive. Actually, no thing or time is ultimately arriving. So we could say that's not arriving.
The term arriving kind of has a connotation of from somewhere.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So in a way, it's attached to the past. But what you read there, not arriving is being. With what is? Or being in the past?
Not. Arriving is the moment of being one with just this while being free from just this.
Not arriving is just being, because if you're arriving, your mind is still mm-hmm. coming from somewhere mm-hmm. getting here, and it hasn't quite.
That's a good point about the word arrive is even a little bit different than arise, because arrive implies that, yeah, you're coming from somewhere. Arriving here from there. Yeah. Or like in Suzuki Roshi's monthly memorials, we say the pure Dhammakaya neither appears nor disappears. But then the power of Buddha's great vows reveals coming and going. Again, that's it's like this both sides in that little verse. It's like the pure Dharmakaya is like the ultimate truth, doesn't arise and cease. But due to Buddha's great vows, he can manifest this Nirmanakaya body on the earth as Shakyamuni Buddha and reveal coming and going.
Isn't that the literal translation of Tathagata?
The thus come one. Thus come and thus gone.
And gone thus.
Yeah, gone thus. So that's interesting too. We could say, and you know, it's a dynamic word because you could say it means gone to thusness, or gone or come from thusness, or gone in thus away, which is not really gone and not or not really come in the way that things usually come and go. So the Buddha gave himself the nickname, the Tathagata, instead of saying, well, you know, I'm going out to lunch today. He'd say, like, the Tathagata is going out to lunch today. Just to remind people, maybe, that he was actually coming from thusness and not really going to lunch, but actually going to thusness. But through his great vows, it appeared that he was going to lunch. But his lunch was thus also. As Dogen says, if all these things do not actualize time, they cannot be thus. Not arriving is the moment of being one with just this while being free from just this. It's such a great line, and we just see what the others say. The will, which is instead of the mind, the will is the time of the realized universe. That's Nishijima's translation of Genjo Koan, is the realized universe. The will is the time of the realized universe. The words are the time of the pivot, which is the ascendant state. Presence is the time of laying bare the substance, and absence is the time of sticking to this and parting from this. That's not so great. Not so dynamic as this one. Arriving is the time of the whole body. Not arriving is the time of one with this, detached from this. That's pretty much the same. Reaching is the time of the body of total emancipation. Not reaching is the time you are one with this and apart from this. You should attest and affirm thus. You should being time thus. You should being time thus. In this way, you must endeavor to actualize the time being. It's that endeavors, that ben of bendowa. You could say, like, wholeheartedly. In this way, you must wholeheartedly endeavor to actualize the time being. The old masters have thus uttered these words, but is there nothing further to say? I'd say, yeah, there's nothing further to say. Please, Dogen, leave us alone. Is there nothing further to say? You should say, now this is Dogen saying, mind and words arriving partially are the time being. Mind and words not arriving partially are the time being. Which harkens back to, remember that section about half of the time being completely actualized is actually what, you know, is what's actually the case, as opposed to half-actualized time being. I think Dogen says something like, the half-actualized time being is actually half the time being completely actualized.
The time being half-actualized is half of the time being completely actualized.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. So,
that was earlier,
where meaning, remember that section for those who were here?
The half is fully the half.
So like I think I was commenting on it, like half-hearted practice is completely half-hearted practice. Like if you're feeling this is half, you know, halfway zazen, sleepy zazen, not really complete zazen, but it's actually completely that way. Yeah. And that's a fully sleepy zazen is like a complete expression of the time being. And as a practice instruction, I think this is a really valuable point that like to when we're feeling like just like we're just not really doing it and not really, we might feel like now we're not really getting what Dogen's talking about here. But are halfway getting it, maybe kind of getting the general gist, but really like we're like really can't really meet Dogen here. Are half meeting Dogen, halfway meeting Dogen is completely manifesting a half meeting of Dogen. You know, it's like there's nothing lacking ever is the point. It's very hard to accept this.
And I can kind of see it in, like in the sitting, when you bring it up, it's sort of like there's no arriving at being present. You're just present. You are present in whatever it is your state is.
Yeah.
You know, you distracted state, you're fully distracted state, or relaxed mind, you're fully relaxed mind. But it's not like you have to get from somewhere else to somewhere else.
And at the moment of totally accepting that.
It is, you are.
Yeah.
On that point.
And complete acceptance of that, whatever mind we might call halfway, is completing it. And then it's a peaceful mind completion is peaceful and at ease, whereas feeling halfway is the experience is not so peaceful. We're feeling we're feeling a lack, unsatisfactory. Yeah.
Completely feeling unsatisfactory.
Yes. Yes. Completely feeling half satisfied. is a complete satisfaction of halfness. Half moon is completely a half moon, and like how horrible it would be if it was trying to stretch into a full moon at its moment of halfness. Yeah, it's completely half. Yeah, or the similarly with the moon, it's like the image of the hazy moon of enlightenment. The as complete in that image is like a complete fulfillment. It's like, it's this hazy moon, but it's like a complete full moon. And that's our sentient being experiences. It's like the moon of enlightenment is hazy, but it's a complete moon. Or it's half, or it's quarter, or it's new. So new that we don't even see it. So mind and words arriving partially are the time being completely. Mind and words not arriving partially are also the time being. So many different aspects here we're talking about, you know, again, the Tathagata that seems to arrive but doesn't really arrive, all of it, halfway and not halfway, partial and full, all the time being. I don't think Dogen has yet said, claim that anything is not the time being. Oh, he might. I can't remember now. He said, in this manner you should examine the time being. to have him raise the eyebrows, this is Dogen's final capping poem here, to have him raise the eyebrows and blink is half the time being, to have him raise the eyebrows and blink is the time being missed. Not to have him raise the eyebrows and blink is half the time being. Not to have him raise the eyebrows and blink is the time being missed. So there's some... making him raise his eyebrows and blink his eyes is half time being. Making him raise his eyebrows and blink his eyes is full time being. Missed. In that case, full and half. Oh, half the time being missed. Making him raise his eyebrows, half, and blink his eyes is full. Yeah, instead of saying half and then time being missed, they said half and full in that one.
And he uses the missed in the thing before, too. Thus, the time being half actualized is half of the time being completely actualized, and a moment that seems to be missed is also completely being.
So this is going, yeah, seems to be actually referring back to that earlier part about... So not only is half-heartedness really complete-heartedness, but when we seem to have missed something, which is kind of nice because he's putting this in at the very end. So maybe if he say he's giving this talk and people are like, slow down, you know, he's not even stopping to talk about it. He's like, well, you think you missed something at the end of the talk here? It's the time being missed. But what is the time being missed? Is it the missed time being? He was moved to raise his eyebrow and wink in half of time being. He was moved to raise his eyebrow and wink in the jumble that is time being. Having him raise his eyebrows and blink his eyes is half being time. Having him raise his eyebrows and blink his eyes is a miss being time. And here's a good one. Letting him raise his eyebrows and blink his eyes is a half being time. Letting him raise his eyebrows and blink his eyes is a wrong! Exclamation point being time. I guess when it said missed. It's not right. They put the whole thing to bluegrass. Wrong, eyebrows and blink is wrong. Being time and is a half time being. Being time is a wrong time being. Like that. But we need banjo, though, right? Mm-hmm. Wrong or mistake or missed is more or less analogous to that earlier part about partial and so on. So this is just Dogen's poetry at the end here. Thus, to study thoroughly, coming and going, and to study thoroughly, arriving and beyond arriving, is the time being of this moment. And we conveniently have arrived at the time being of 8 o'clock p.m. on Sunday night of a day in late November. Many centuries after the first day of winter in the first year of Ninji 1240, where this was written at Kosho Hoden Monastery, and then copied during the summer practice period by Edgyo 3 years later. So, whatever's happened here has been whatever's happened here. And I've enjoyed studying the time being and being time. And I don't know whether I feel more clear or more overwhelmed than when beginning. Let me give you a calligraphy, completion calligraphy. Thanks to Yoshi's calligraphy class, which I was taking this time, and thanks to Dogen's emphasis on flowing, I try to do a flowing uji. Uji. Yeah, that's the characters for U and G in a kind of calligraphic style. So you can, if you look at the characters, you can see them in there. It's like a one-stroke flow of U. Oh, we dedicate any merit arising from this discussion of time being, words of time being, and mind of time being, arriving and not arriving, halfway and completely to the resting at ease in this time being for all beings and all time. May they be happy and free. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. Surpassable, I vow to become it.